Today's lesson is from the 16th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, beginning at the 21st verse. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord, this must never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life?" The word of God for the people of God.
This morning we are privileged to have Reverend Stephen Hartsfield come and deliver our message to us this morning. When Peter Cottrell arrived here almost a year ago, he gave me a list of people that were top guest ministers he would like to come and deliver word to us from this pulpit. The first name he mentioned was yours, Stephen, so I don't know, you rank right up there with a handful of people that he holds very dear to his heart. And this church holds the Florida United Methodist Children's Home very dear to our hearts. And so we are glad to welcome you to our pulpit this morning. Would you please come?
Well, good morning. Yeah, Pete and I were in college together. We go way back. I knew Pete when he had hair. So Pete and I go way back. I know I could stand for about 20 minutes and just tell you stories about Pete from the college days, but I won't do that to him. One, I want to thank Pete for the invitation to come and be with you this morning and to share this in time of worship with you, and also to Laura and everybody here has been so helpful this morning and all your hospitality. I have unique opportunities as a minister. I don't preach in the same church every Sunday. I preach in a different church every Sunday. I've been in hundreds of churches around, Methodist churches around Florida now, and I don't always receive the same level of hospitality. It's hard to believe. Sometimes it's one nice. All I'm doing is preaching. Sometimes I show up and they hand me a bulletin, and that's it. I'm doing announcements. I'm doing the whole thing by myself, and it's nice just to be able to preach. Sometimes they don't even guess preacher's coming. I've shown up, and the first words I hear is, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm a guest preacher. Where's our preacher?" "I don't know. I was just told to be here this morning." So I appreciate all the warm hospitality I've had this morning. Before I preach, I do want to say a word about the Florida United Methodist Children's Home. It is your children's home. It belongs to you as United Methodist. We would not be in ministry if it were not for what you and all the other United Methodist churches around the conference do for us through the Fifth Sunday offering and the different ways people help us. Because you support us, you allow us to be a Christian church-based children's home where Jesus Christ is a part of everything we do. And we think that makes all the difference in the world when it comes to the healing of a child and a family. Because every child that comes into our care is spiritually wounded in some way. And we think if you don't touch that, true and complete healing is not taking place. So we're going to have a chaplain and a full spiritual life program. Staff can talk about their faith. It makes a difference. The Children's Home started in 1908 as the Florida Methodist Orphanage, started by the Methodist of Florida. So we're 108 years old this year, been in continuous, constant ministry. And we started with two little children in that orphanage in 1908. It's going into a very diverse, very complex ministry, trying to meet the needs of the kids that are coming at us nowadays. We're still a home where kids come and live on our campus. They come from situations of abuse, neglect, broken, dysfunctional families, a wide range of problems children face. If you try to imagine the worst possible scenario for a child, believe me, I've seen worse. You will not believe what some of these kids have come out of and the very difficult, challenging circumstances they face. But they will come and live on our campus for a season of their life and try to begin that sense of healing and wholeness and bringing back to some sense of normalcy in their life. We offer emergency shelter care. Those kids will stay 1 to 30 days. It's a safe, secure place for the authorities to put a child to figure out what's going on. What do we need to do? What's happening? Two of our homes are called therapeutic group homes. They are higher level of care. These kids are stepping down from a psychiatric hospital, a lockdown facility. They're stepping down. We want to see how they do. We also offer a full independent living program for kids who are between the ages of 18 and 26. We're trying to help them make that adjustment into the adult world. Some of these kids need a lot of help making that bridge into the adult world. It's tough nowadays. We have a preschool, daycare, infant care facility that serves our surrounding community, or an after-school program. We have a new school on our campus that's 2 years old. It just finished. We had five graduates graduated from high school. It's a Legacy Leaders Academy. It's a wonderful school with kids. Some of our kids stay on our campus, and we teach them there in small classrooms, a lot of attention, a lot of help. We're dealing with social and emotional issues. It's been a real successful program for us. Many of you don't know, we do foster care. In 2002, the state privatized foster care, and we thought we could do it and do it well, so we became a licensed foster care provider. That means we recruit the families. They're our kids, they're our families, and we're taking care of those kids as well. And we're in four counties around the state of Florida now offering foster care services. We also have a second campus now. It's almost 2 years old now in Madison, Florida. Between Lake City and Tallahassee. It's a wonderful campus, has the equine therapy, the horse therapy up there as well. About a 500-acre campus. It's a beautiful place. So now it's the children's home with two locations besides the Enterprise campus, which is not too far away from here. So I know the census Friday said we have 438 kids in our care on Friday. So what started with two little children, now we are dealing with a lot of kids, with a lot of situations. And in essence, they're your kids. You're their mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters while they're with us, because you as a church have said, we think the church should take care of these kids. Should not be left up to the state. Should not be left up to secular institutions, but the church as a place in taking care of children in need. So for 108 years now, you all have been doing that. I invite you to come and see the children's home. We've never been there. It's not too far away, just about 45 minutes away, maybe not even that. We're located in Enterprise, Florida, on the shores of Lake Monroe. It's a beautiful campus. If you've never been, we invite you to come and see it, take a tour. We like tours. We want people to come on campus. And again, thank you. This church has had such a warm relationship with the children's home. You're very supportive. And again, I thank you for everything you do for the children's home. Now, Pete invited me to preach, so you're going to get a sermon, whether you want one or not. But I see you got a clock back there. I think that's a good idea. I really can't read it, so it's not going to make much difference. But it always reminds me of what a professor said at seminary. He said, if you want to be a successful preacher, preach about two things. If you preach about these two things, your congregation will always love you. You will never have a problem in your church as long as you preach about these two things. First is, preach about the love of God. Second thing is, preach about 20 minutes. And so it's two things I try to live by. But the basic question I want to ask you this morning is, why are you here? Why did you come to church this morning? Now, as a minister, I will say, of course you should be here. You should be every Sunday. But what made you get up, get dressed, and come to church today? It's been easy to say to yourself, to your spouse, look, we go to church every Sunday. We're always there. Pete's gone. We got some guest preacher. It's a beautiful day out. Let's do something else. But you didn't. You're here. Why are you here? Now, I've never really known a time without the church in my life. My father was a United Methodist minister. When Sunday morning rolled around the Hartsfield home, there's never any discussion of, are we going to church today? Are we not going to church today? When your father's a minister, guess what you have to do? Gotta go to church. Seems like Sunday after Sunday, every single Sunday in my life, I've been in church. I think it's important for me to ask, why do I keep coming to church? Now, there's many people out there now will tell you, you're wasting your time here. Church is no longer effective in the world. It's a relic of a bygone era. You could say to me, preacher, you know what? I got a stack of bills on my kitchen table waiting to be paid. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm having trouble at work. My job may not be there next month. My marriage is on shaky ground. I can't communicate with my children. I'm finding no joy or meaning in life. What good is it going to do to go to church? See, after you leave here this morning, nothing tangible to show for it. House won't be picked up, or yard work won't be done, errands won't be run. We put aside things to come to church. So why are you here? Now, the church means different things to different people. To some, the church is a building. The church is a structure. It's okay to be proud of your church buildings. You've got a beautiful church here, but it should be more than that. Many people I know get married in a particular church because they thought it was the prettiest church, or was a church that charged the least to do a wedding. They'll tell you, Pastor, we shopped around, looked at different churches, we'd like to get married here, is that okay? They're just looking for a building. In a previous appointment, I started a new church. They basically showed me a vacant lot and said good luck. They really did. We began meeting in a high school chorus room. We eventually moved into a storefront. We had a bait and tackle on one side of us and a pizzeria on the other side of us. It was an interesting experience. But as I would go out and visit people and invite them to come to church, there were many people who said to me, and more than you might imagine, let me know when you get a church built. When are you going to have a building? Somehow we were just playing church. We were pretending church. They needed that building for it to feel like church. It always made me think of the early church. It conquered the Roman Empire with no buildings, no wealth, no prestige, no social standing. It was persecuted and hindered in every way. All they had was the power of their faith in Jesus Christ, and that's all they needed, and that's all any of us ever really need. Now, for others, the church is nothing more than a social club. Church gets accused of this one all the time by those on the outside. Church is just a place to come, see your friends, have good fellowship. You know, we've known each other for a long time. It's just a great, warm fellowship. That's a part of it. That's a good part of it. But it should be more than that. You know, we love a potluck dinner. We love a Sunday school party. We love all that fellowship. Just don't ask us to do anything too difficult or too uncomfortable or too time-consuming. Now, for others, a church is nothing more than a storm shelter. As long as life is running smoothly, they think nothing of the church, but when trouble strikes, they come running. Church, help me. Church, fix my problem. Church, make it better. And when the crisis disappears, they disappear again until the next crisis arises, they come running back to the church. Now, the church should be there for them, of course, but the church should be more than that. I know at times a funeral home has called me and asked me to do the funeral of someone who's died. I have no church affiliation, but the family wants a minister to conduct a funeral. I always try and say yes, but I ask them, what makes people who never, ever, ever darken the door of a church suddenly want the church, need the church, ask for the church? In some ways, it's the same thing that draws us in here to this fellowship this morning. That world out there, even all that it can offer us, will still leave in us an emptiness that says, is this it? Is this all there is to life? The spiritual dimensions of life get pushed back into a corner, and the world out there does not even want to leave you time to talk about it. How many times this week did you talk with someone about Jesus? How many times this week did you have a deep, intentional, spiritual conversation with someone? How many times this week did you leave the company of someone having been fed spiritually? See, the church is more than a building. It's more than a storm shelter. It's more than a social club. The church is a place to come and be embraced with the love of God and in turn embrace others with that same love. There's a yearning in all of us for something real, something more than what we're living for right now. In some ways, it's a desire to reach out and touch the hem of Jesus' garment as he passes by. A desire to feel his healing touch in our life. A desire to stand in the shadow of the cross. A desire to pick up that cross and to follow. In the scripture lesson that was read this morning, Jesus has withdrawn with his disciples into a quiet place where there are no crowds. And Jesus chooses this private time with his disciples to bring up the subject of his suffering and his death. He must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things and be killed, and on the third day be raised. But Peter will have none of this talk about death. And Peter and Jesus begin to exchange words. This is not a polite conversation between Jesus and Peter. They're having an argument. Because for Jesus, it's vitally important that the disciples understand who he is and what he's all about. But Peter can't get by this talk about death. And he's in essence saying, Jesus, don't talk about death. We can survive. We can beat this thing. We'll overcome it somehow. Don't talk about death. But Jesus is telling Peter, it's not like that. You don't do everything you can to cling to your life. You don't do everything you can to survive. Peter, you give your life away. Peter's talking about hanging on to life, and Jesus is talking about giving life away, and there's a big difference. But what does it mean to give your life for Christ? What does it mean for this church to give its life for Jesus Christ? I think in some ways it means you must be willing to care for and cradle children who are not your own. It means you must be willing to sit down with people and enjoy a meal with people who the world says are unacceptable. means to stand up for what is right and good and be counted, to embrace people who may not be your friends, to stand up for what is right, to be a witness for Jesus Christ, even when the world laughs behind your back at such silly religious talk. It means to continue to reach out to this world in spite of every difficulty, in spite of every hardship. It means to give your life. Now, this passage has taken on new meaning to me since I've been in the children's home and do the work I do. As I said before, I'm in a lot of churches. I've probably been in over 500 to almost 600 of the United Methodist churches in Florida now. Every once in a while, I walk into a church, and it is dead. Has a deadly feel to it. Nobody seems excited to be there. They just seem to have come out of a sense of routine or drudgery or obligation. No opportunity for mission or service or outreach. And after the service, people will come up to me and they'll say, you know, preacher, we wish you could do more for the children's home or this ministry and that ministry. And they'll actually say it. We're trying to survive. Some of our best givers have died or moved away. The neighborhood has changed. And they give me a litany of excuses of why they're dying as a church. Next week, I walk into a church and it's alive and dynamic. Doesn't matter the size of the church. The people are excited to be there. They know why they're there. There's all kinds of opportunity for mission and service and outreach. And it began to dawn on me, this passage of Scripture is not only true for us as individuals, it's true for us as a church as well. When you try to hang on to your life, when you try to cling to your life, when you try to do everything you can to survive, you lose your life. But when you give your life away for Christ, it can come back to you in so many new and exciting and different ways. The paradox of this passage, it's really true. When you try to hang on to your life, you lose it. When you give your life away, you have life. It really is true. We're gathered here together as the church to bear witness what God has done in our life through Jesus Christ. See, in essence, the church is pushing back the world and creating this sacred space where you can enter as strangers and become friends, where you can enter and find hope and peace and love, where you can enter to be equipped to be a disciple for Jesus Christ, so that you don't stay in this warm, wonderful fellowship of the church, however tempting that might be, but you have the courage to go back out into a world that is hurting and hungry and desperate to hear good news. It's the same thing we're trying to do at the children's home, we're trying to push back the world and create this sacred space where children have been hurt and abused by life in so many ways can find a place of hope and love and peace. Well, many will hear for the very first time about God's love. So when the day comes they're able to leave the children's home, they can even know that God loves them, that God cares for them, that they are of sacred worth. We have a chapel service each Sunday morning at the children's home. And during that chapel service is a prayer time. And many times they lift up celebrations and concerns that are happening in their life. And that time, more than any of them, makes me realize how different my life experience has been. I had a wonderful childhood, filled with great memories. I had parents who gave me absolute, unconditional love. These children are facing things I never even knew existed as a child. Think for most of the kids at the children's home, if you ask them, deep down, what do you want? Deep down, what do you want? Most would have a hard time putting into the words, but most would say, to some extent, you know what I want? I wish I had a mom and a dad and a brother and a sister, a house with a white picket fence and a dog running through the yard. They want that ideal of what it means to be a child in a family, and they don't have it, and they know it, and it hurts. Some of the celebrations and concerns I've heard lifted up in the chapel service. Where concern might be, my mother came to visit yesterday. It didn't go well. We argued a lot. The courts have ordered my parents to have no contact with my sister. I don't know where she is now. My daddy went wild last week, and my mommy had to go to a shelter. Hope I can see her soon. Or celebration. My dad may get out of jail in a couple of months, and maybe I can see him. My dad moved up north, and I don't have to see him anymore. That was a celebration in a young girl's life that she didn't have to see her father anymore. That's why we're there. That's why we're in ministry. That's why you give. We're there for children who have been hurt and abused by life in so many ways. But I stand in awe of children, really. I've become to realize how strong and resilient children really are. How given a sense of love and peace and a sense of place, how quickly they can respond and quickly become children again. It's an amazing thing to see take place. Children really are strong and resilient. I want to share just a few examples with you. A resident wrote a letter, and in that letter he writes, "I'm writing this letter in an effort to let you know that in my past lonely, hard times, how much your assistance was appreciated. I would like to first thank you for having faith in me. This gave me the motivation to want to make everyone proud of me. Secondly, you gave me a lovely home that I could call my own. This gave me a sense of security and comfort, knowing that I could sleep safely and not have to worry where my next meal was coming from. And last but not least, you gave me love. There are many things on this earth that can be appraised, but love is simply not one of them. It is a wonderful feeling to know that you are loved, and I can gladly say I felt loved. Thank you." From a parent, "I'm writing this letter to thank each and every one of you at the Children's Home for all the loving care you have given my daughter. The last 6 months have completely changed our daughter and our family. You've been able to accomplish things that her father and I have been trying to accomplish for the last 10 years. I know that God led us to you because the very first day I walked on your campus, I knew that God was there and that she belonged there also. We still have many miles to travel with her, but the road is so much smoother now. Thank you." And finally, I want to read you a poem and a letter. They're written by a young girl that was in our care. The poem was written shortly after she arrived, and the letter was written 9 months later. And I think they express far better than any words of mine, not only why we're in ministry at the Children's Home, but also why we are in church this morning. The poem is entitled Rejection. It goes like this. "No one wanted me. From the start, I was rejected, the chosen one not to be chosen. Parents that were never there, like a shadow they move, all about me they are, but never knowing me and never caring. Then they never come close, and I never want them to. They are never invited in, not even in the cold rain. For I am in the cold rain, and I'm reaching, reaching, but it's useless, for no one will come. I sit and cry, the tears pour from the eyes, but they come from the heart. They shall never hurt me again, for I am indestructible, and I shall reject them as they have me." That's a young girl who's very hurt, who's very angry, who's very bitter. 9 months later, she wrote a letter to one of our staff members. And in that letter, she writes, "The home has changed me so over these past 9 months, and I don't think I could ever repay the caring and kindness that I've received from the home. They've helped me realize I do have a lot of strength on the inside. Through the rough times, the home stepped in and walked me through the rough spots. When I started to fall, once again, the home picked me up and carried me back onto the straight road. Yes, I get in my share of trouble at the home, but I'll always be grateful for everything the home has given me and taught me. I know I will not be the strong person I am today. I know that someday I shall return to the home to give of myself to thank you all so much for caring about me and always being there for me. Please share this letter with others on the staff, because of all of you, I shall have a better life. Thank you so much." That's a young life that was changed, really born again through God's love. After about a year and a half, she was able to leave the Children's Home, a strong, vibrant, healthy young lady. And you see, when you come into the fellowship of the church and experience the grace of Jesus Christ in your life, then your life should change just as dramatically as that young girl's life has been changed. And then every time you come into this fellowship, you should experience again what that grace is all about. You should never come to church out of a sense of drudgery or routine or obligation. Every time you come into this fellowship, you should have a spring in your step and joy in your heart, remembering what God has done in your life through Jesus Christ. I don't care if you've been coming to church for 6 days or 60 years. Every time you come into this fellowship, you should experience again what that grace is all about. And in response to that grace, we should come ready to give our life. Because that's really why we're here this morning. If you are here for any other reason, you are here for the wrong reason. We are here this morning to take up a cross and follow. We are here to give our life. Amen.